You know what petrol you use as well, don't you?
No, go on.
BP.
BP, yeah. Very good.
Just So Jables. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Just So Jables Film Podcast with me, Jables.
Me, our kid.
And me, producer Ben.
We're going to be tight now because we've got a dinner date.
We do.
Well, here on the Just So Jables Film Podcast, we like to go and watch a film in the cinema when we can. Something new. Give you our hot takes straight away. Instant reactions. Just top dollar insight into a film that we haven't done any collusional.
Collusional?
Yeah, is that a word?
It is now.
Collusional research.
To make ourselves look either great and or awesome. This week, our kid, what are we watching?
The Beekeeper.
Ah, nice. But before we get onto that, Ben, what did we watch last week?
We watched, don't tell me, Ferrari.
Indeed. Our kid, how right or wrong did we get with our hot takes on Ferrari?
Well, we felt it was fairly middling, didn't we?
Yeah.
It was just maybe one up from fine.
Yeah.
I think
all right is what I classed
fine,
it as.
Like fine plus.
Yeah. Seems to be the consensus. Most of the critics I looked at were sitting it at around 3 stars.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nothing much on YouTube. 2 Guardian reviews, though.
Obviously. Two. I'm surprised there's only limited to 2.
Yeah. Peter Bradshaw described it as watchable.
Oh.
Yeah, 3 stars, watchable.
Blimey.
I mean, he's kind of right, though.
Yeah, a weird mix of brash and dour, rarely putting the pedal to the metal. Penelope Cruz brings gall, spite and passion, and there's not much for Shailene Woodley to do in the thankless role of Lena. Driver is unengaging.
Never gets into Top Gear. That's what I'd have written if I worked for The Guardian.
Yeah, Wendy Eyde, also for The Gardener, said that Adam Driver was lackluster and upstaged by Penelope Cruz as his enjoyably angry wife, which I thought enjoyably angry was a bit harsh because she was actually passionate in her grief, wasn't she? So to say that was enjoyable.
I think they mean enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, I know, but still it felt a little bit schadenfreude-y.
I think you're kind of comparing apples and pears of 2 different characters. It doesn't stack up. What did you say at the start? What did she first say about Driver?
Lackluster.
In comparison.
Yeah, upstaged but I thought they played off each other
point.
Quite well.
Yeah.
Brian Tallarico, apologies for pronunciation, for Roger Ebert.
Said I'm going to tell him.
An impeccably crafted film about an older man considering his own legacy in the wake of losing an heir. Which I thought, fair enough, because we struggled with a theme, didn't we? We struggled with how to describe it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that's a perfect description, but I guess it's fine.
It feels like that's overstating it a little bit. That's trying to add more meaning to the film than was actually there. But
I think it was there, but I think it was lost in trying to do everything else as well. So, I mean, I'd kind of stick with what we said. It hasn't gone into my mind much over the week. It's not going to hang about for me.
You keep saying introducing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mike Hawthorne, future champion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was speaking to Mum about it and she wanted to watch it and she's not that bothered, not from talking to us, just like looking at other reviews herself. And so I'd watch it with him again when it comes out on TV.
Still a Ferrari 348 for me.
Yeah. Our kid?
Yeah, same.
All right.
Ferrari 348 for you as well.
Ferrari 348
Well, since you haven't said much, why don't you tell us what you're on about this week?
Well, I'm on about an interesting little film that we watched at the weekend called Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes, which is a Japanese film from 2020.
Okay.
So I don't know if you've heard of it at all.
No.
You hadn't heard of it.
Hadn't heard of it, no, but I don't really look at the press for these things.
Yeah, so I found a little film advertised on Twitter called River, which is a Japanese film, and it looked like an interesting little time shift film. And when I looked into it further, it hasn't actually been released here yet, but Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes is an earlier film made by the same people. So I thought, oh, well, that looks quite interesting. We'll have a look at that. It's by a filmmaker called Junta Tamaguchi, and it's basically about a slightly hapless guy called Kato who runs a cafe, and he finds out that his computer can see 2 minutes into the future. So him and his wacky band of friends set up a bunch of screens to try and see further forward in time, and lots of funny little antics ensue. I enjoyed it. I think what I would say is that if you need time travel to make logical sense in things, you probably won't like it.
Oh,
there's
a lot
of paradoxes and confusion and things like that. But if you just like the idea of quirky characters getting into chaotic adventures in time, and a kind of heartwarming message about how you use your own time,
okay,
then you'd probably quite like it. It's really short. It's only like 68 minutes long. It's okay. On Channel 4 at the moment. So I'm not sure how you'll feel about it, because I know you don't really like it when you don't get the rules. The rules in this were a bit like, oh, what's happening? Well, I don't really know.
It's more when they break their own rules.
Yeah.
It's usually caused by sequels or trying to do too much. But, you know, it sounds interesting. It sounds like the kind of thing I'd like to watch.
Yeah, it was fun, wasn't it? Yeah, it all takes place, like, in the cafe or in the complex. Okay. So it's almost like a bottle episode kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's not. And I'd say it's with the Paradox stuff, it's not so sophisticated that it matters. They don't try and weave some elaborate plot. It's just a bunch of stuff that's happening.
It might not be too bad then for me.
Yeah. And it's very fast-paced, isn't it? Like, they realise what's happening fairly quickly and they're slightly freaked out by it, but then they kind of buy into it and they're like, where could we take this? And they experiment. Yeah. So I quite liked it from that point of view. But my brain was hurting at some point because it's so fast-paced. And they're basically, it's like two rooms. There's like an apartment above the cafe, isn't there? It's 2 minutes different to the cafe downstairs. And I was like, hang on a minute. But they're upstairs. And I was like, And then I think you just have to relax into it and just say, well, it's just a bit of quirky fun. And then, it works. But
I'm definitely not going to watch that with the folks then, because they were really struggling with the time jumps in Reacher.
Okay.
Right. They're not even time jumps. It's just like flashbacks. It was awful. Are they back in? How did they get to there? Well, it's like, no. So I had to like effectively go, future, present, past.
Well, you could have wound them up. You could have said, well, actually, you know that little car that Reach keeps getting in? That's actually a DeLorean.
Yes, it's just not worth it, Ben. Okay. You've got to keep it simple. Well, Ben, why don't you keep talking and tell us what you're on about this week?
Talking of nonsense, Sharktopus. So we finally watched this.
Yes,
I think
we
might have mentioned this earlier on the pod. So this is this was like the Christmas tradition of what's the crappiest DVD you can get from a charity shop or the Entertainment Exchange, like a secondhand DVD.
Yeah.
And my gift to you, Jables, was Sharktopus.
It was indeed.
Which, I mean, the clue's in the name. It is a combination of a shark and an octopus.
Yeah.
It's in the Jaws theme of, well, it's going to attack people. And I'm not sure what to say. It basically is what you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
It is a sharktopus. There are a bunch of, this is going to sound harsh, but like third-rate actors bimbling about trying to deal with the sharktopus.
Yeah.
Third-rate plus Eric Roberts, who's kind of, at the same time, phoning it in, but also behaving weirdly.
Yeah, taking it very seriously at times. And I don't know, I suppose they got their money's worth out of him.
Yeah. I mean, they probably half the budget went on his hairstylist.
Yeah.
And the other half went on the CGI for the sharktopus.
I think there was definitely a chunk on the scotch as well.
There's a scene where the thing is as well, so Jables and I were also drinking a whiskey at the time. Eric Roberts was drinking whiskey.
Yeah.
And at one point, we were fairly convinced that he was quite drunk.
He was
in
actually
real life.
Drunk. Either but he's the most amazing actor in the world, or he looks like he was a person who, at that point, didn't care too much and was just like drunk and just, I'll just do this bit drunk.
Maybe one of the producers missed the memo on, like, it's supposed to be cold tea.
Yeah.
He actually bought a bottle of scotch and he was just, like, sipping it and then it just got out of hand. It was quite good fun.
It was.
But it was also terrible.
It was.
Now, here's the thing, Jables. So I'll give you a little bit of information on it, not that you need too much. So basically, Sharktopus is a kind of an experiment gone wrong. It's not a natural thing. It's a kind of genetic experiment. The way it's, like, it's designed as a military killing machine. But the way they control it is to basically use a zip tie to strap a box to its head. That they can use a laptop to control it. And then, oh no, the zip tie snapped and the box fell off. And that's all you need to know, really.
Yeah.
But the fun facts about this film are it starts off in Santa Monica or somewhere, California, and then very quickly moves to Mexico,
probably quickly.
For budgetary reasons. And then this is one of those, like, they're stretching it to get to an hour and a half straight-to-video type films. And they kept interleaving what I think you thought, Jables, was like stock footage of things happening in Mexico resorts.
Like a tourist video.
No, it was. And the music as well. It would cut to like a tourist music video kind of, you know.
Mariachi bands.
Almost. People dancing, like dance troupes and people having a beer on the beach. And it was just like, it felt like they're just using that to pad the film out because they had to get to 90 minutes for it to be releasable. So they just bought some footage from the tourist board or something.
There was also a lot of shots of boat engines or the wake of a boat in close-up, which were kind of, again, just seemed like they were there to space it out a little bit.
Yeah, there were also a lot of close-up shots of ladies'
bikini
bottoms.
So this was very much a 2010 film, was it, Ben?
Yeah.
And it very much felt like a Michael Bay 2010 film.
Okay. okay.
It, well, yeah. This film isn't by Michael Bay, just to be clear.
No, no, but it's what. Yeah, there was a lot of arse and boob shots, let's just say, close-ups. So much so we were just like, this is not right, it's weird.
Right, do you want to know something amazing though, Jables?
Go on.
There are actually two official sequels to this film.
No.
Yeah, I just found that out earlier. In the future, we can watch Sharktopus versus Terraconda. I guess that's Pterodactyl Anaconda.
And, oh, nice.
And then there's another sequel, Sharktopus versus Whale Wolf.
Nice. That's good.
Ridiculous. And I think from reading brief synopsis, it's the same. It can't be the same Sharktopus, but it comes from the same root. So well, it's Sharktopus just going and fighting different things. But anyway,
I swear I saw a little baby Sharktopus escape at one point.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I did say like that, but it's hard to make out. But the CGI was so bad, it could really been anything.
Like, ridiculously bad.
I would say, in not its defence, it didn't hang around at the start, did it? It literally got straight into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not particularly many likeable characters in it. There's just
zero,
like,
really.
Yeah. But it ticked the box perfectly, I'd say.
Yeah. So that's what I'm on about. Jables, what are you on about?
I'm not really on about much, actually. I didn't see anything apart from what we watched together. So we watched The Five Doctors, didn't we? Which you bought me for Christmas, our kid.
That was awesome.
Which was great to watch again. We also watched Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
We did.
Which you bought because...
Also awesome.
You wanted me to watch it again and reassess my... Or not reassess it, but just give it another look. And you think I'm just being like a nasty or an arse or whatever I am.
Yeah.
But I stand by how I think, I'm afraid. Like, I like Willy Wonka. I think Willy Wonka himself is great. And he's really good in that film. And I like Veruca. And that's probably about it. I don't like Charlie.
Oh, Charlie's really sweet.
He's kind of sweet, but also a little bit annoying. I don't like his granddad. I think he's a freeloader and just like a bit of a... Yeah, I don't get that. That's just like...
It's just Roald Dahl, grown-ups, isn't it?
It is. There's bits that I like that I didn't forget. I like the school teacher at the start. Yeah. It's just like random. And
I like all the build-up to the start when everyone's looking for the golden tickets. That's probably my favourite bit. Like where the guy gets kidnapped and the ransom. You know, how long have I got to think it over? Mum and Dad were chuckling
at that. That was good. And the cut to like the random news stories. It's just like the way that's done is good. But
it's great.
But weirdly, I just like whenever it was kind of in the bucket family and stuff like that, I just like, but thanks anyway.
No worries.
Well, let's crack straight on to this week then, shall we?
Yeah, who's doing film info?
I'm doing film info.
Go ahead.
You tell us all about The Beekeeper.
The Beekeeper. Right. This is a film directed by David Ayer, who is actually, I think, a slightly interesting character. I don't know if you've come across him before.
David Ayer, he done Suicide Squad?
He did, yeah, directed Suicide Squad, and not a huge amount that you'd necessarily know about. A film called Harsh Times, which I think we watched like 15 years ago with Christian Bale. And he also does screenplays. So he did the screenplay for Training Day and The Fast and the Furious. But yeah, so his background, which might give you a little bit of a hint into the way he's making films. He left home when he was a teenager. He was like kicked out and he went to just live in South Central in Los Angeles.
Okay.
With some family members or something. So his entire thing is he's just like been on the streets seeing what happens, and he's just kind of inspired by that kind of streetwise, people fighting each other kind of thing. That was probably through the 80s and into the 90s.
Yeah.
And he's always just done these kind of action films and I guess elements of vengeance and things like that. So maybe he's a good fit for this film.
Must where he got his inspiration for Bright then.
Right. The basic premise of The Beekeeper is, so in it, it's obviously Jason Statham as the protagonist. He is the beekeeper. This is going to be a vengeance film. I think it's his landlord or something. So he's living on a farm or something, keeping bees. And then his landlord gets embroiled in a phishing scam, gives away all her money, loses all her money, and then kills herself. And then he's like, right, I'm going to sort this out because this is not on. So I watched the trailer earlier. Platt gives a bit too much away. So let's not give too much detail at this point. So basically he's going on a vengeance mission.
Okay.
Who else is in it? Josh Hutcherson from Journey to the Center of the Earth, Hunger Games, Five Nights at Freddy's, which we haven't seen, but Jables has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's also got Minnie Driver in it. I don't know if that's just a cameo. Or Felicia Rashad, who I don't know.
Mrs. Cosby and Gus's mum in Psy.
All right. I don't know. And also Jeremy Irons, who is presumably probably not in it that much, but he's a shadowy character behind the scenes. Yeah. So that's all I'm going to tell you for the minute, apart from budget. So I think probably Jables, you don't have particularly high hopes for this film. We'll get onto that in a minute. But it's actually made some money. So $75 million so far on a budget of $34 million.
Okay, when was it released?
A couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
So there we go. Let's get into it. Jables.
Okay. So I haven't actually watched the trailer.
Okay. That's probably good, though.
I saw a clip of... It wasn't a trailer. It was, I think it might have been the teaser for the trailer of him riding on a boat or something like that.
I think that was at the cinema, wasn't it?
Oh, it might have been. But there wasn't a full trailer, was it?
No, it was a teaser.
And I fear that there's going to be lots of him being in the beekeeper organisation or something like this, which is, like, as you said, like a clandestine organisation. And it's going to be lots of references to protecting the queen and looking after the hive and all that kind of stuff, which is probably going to annoy me. But getting on to, like, on a broader scale, so I don't know anything about this. I haven't got particularly high expectations. I haven't got particularly low expectations. I think it's just going to be what it is. It's going to be a Jason Statham-led action film, which can be good, but also can be bad. I don't have the... I was thinking about this. I know you've got a great affinity with the Stath, Ben.
Affinity.
Well, just look at him. I know. They're like twins.
I know. Yeah. And I like a lot of his films, but I haven't watched all of them. I've not gone through the whole back catalogue. I haven't watched all the Cranks and the bits and pieces like that. I only watched, The Mechanic, when we talked about that a few weeks ago. So I only watched that recently. It's not a particularly great film, but I like him when the films are good because I think he's really good.
Yeah.
But when the films are bad, he just kind of gets lost a little. Yeah, he can maybe elevate the film a bit, but like the Meg's a good example. Meg 2, sorry, is a good example for me. It's not that he's bad, but it's not like he can save the film for me. I don't have that affinity of, well, it's Jason Statham, so it's fine. I'm actually hoping for a good film. And if he's good and it's good, then I know I'll enjoy it. If that makes any kind of sense. Yeah, because, like, you know, you think of, like, the Expendables films. He's, you know, the first one is what it is. And I quite like him in that.
You get a kind of sense he knows who he is and he knows what he's doing. Like in Spy, for example, that was probably the first film that I watched and thought, it's not the best film, but he knows what he's doing. He can bring the comedy
because
he understands the role and everything.
Yeah.
I really like him and I'm really looking forward to this film. The things I've seen more recently are things like The Meg, Meg 2, a bit sillier films. But we also watched Wrath of Man not that long ago on Prime. And that's much more serious. Still an action character. It's still a revenge film.
Yeah.
But he's older, more thoughtful in it. And it's really good.
Okay.
I think it's a good film. So I'm hoping that this will have those kinds of things in it. I think it'll be more sort of action-y.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it won't go too John Wick and too stylized. I hope it will be.
I think there's a risk there.
Yeah.
I hope it will just be a bit more thoughtful drama. But I like revenge thrillers. I like the catharsis of the bad guy getting put in his place in the end. So I think it'll be fine.
Yeah. Ben? Go on, Ben. You're the one that's...
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as you've already alluded to, I'll watch anything with Jason Statham in. And I'll think it's worth watching.
I'll know it.
Having said that, I can see that some of the films he's made just aren't very good. And also, you know, he's made quite a lot now of these films where it's just him getting revenge for something that someone's injured or slighted someone he cares about, and then he goes off and sorts it out. We've seen that quite a lot in various Jason Statham films. But I still just like him, and I think you're right in that if the script is right and the production's right and all the rest of it, he kind of shines.
Yeah.
But for me, it's like, even if that doesn't happen, it's fine, because it's still Statham, obviously. One of the things I like about him is he kind of, I think he probably does have quite a bit of range, but he stays in his lane as well. Doesn't try too hard, like with some of the like action style actors. Sometimes it feels a bit forced, and they're trying to be too funny or this or quippy or whatever. I think Jason Statham just kind of keeps it natural. Doesn't venture too far like out of his lane. And that's why it works for me. Obviously, as well, he can do actual fighting in real life, I'm sure. And that I think that always shines through a bit in the film when it's obviously not completely fake.
Yeah.
So I don't have massively high hopes for this film. I think it's just one of those, take the brain out, just watch a bit of action. Like you say, a bit of catharsis. The baddie's going to get their asses kicked and all that kind of stuff. He's going to bring down some massive organisation, presumably, as part of this. And we're going to have some revelations, or this goes back to the government or whatever. And that's fine.
I think as long as I'm not concentrating or made to concentrate on what watch he's wearing at any point during the film,
watches,
then I know I'll be okay.
You mean the Panerai Luminor?
Yeah, because they are very obvious in the films that are bad, and you know that's the thing. So
I love that stuff.
And
you do.
I know you do, but you know it's not going to be a good film because of that, though, as well. Well, should we go and grab some tea and then hit the Majestic?
Let's go.
Yeah.
All right, bye.
Before it hits us. I don't know what that means.
And we're back from the cinema. Our kid, why don't you tell us what we just witnessed?
We just witnessed the beekeeper. Staith as the beekeeper. I'm going to refer to him as the Staith all the way through because I can't remember his character's name. So basically...
Clay.
Okay, thank you. Clay, played by Staith.
Yeah.
Is living a nice quiet life in rural America. He's renting a barn from a nice lady called Mrs. Parker where he looks after his bees. But one horrible afternoon while he's out looking after his bees, an evil fishing company scam her out of all of her money.
That's fishing, PH fishing.
Yeah,
that's
right.
So mortified and ashamed, she kills herself. And following this, Clay takes matters into his own hands because, as it happens, he's not just a mild-mannered beekeeper. He's a different kind of beekeeper out to take down the entire evil, greedy corporation one smug little millennial at a time.
Yeah, like it.
I think that'll do.
It's good. Yeah. It's good. Well, this is Ben's wheelhouse, so before I get into anything, I want to hear from the Staith fan. So, Ben, why don't you give us your first reactions?
Right, instant reactions. This is a great film. I think I'm going to be not necessarily completely alone in that opinion, but I'm slightly off to the end of the spectrum of positive emotion regarding this film, I suspect.
Yeah.
Right, I'm not going to say loads because the thing about this film, I think, is that it will be very easy to say lots of negative things about it because there are a lot of things wrong with it, objectively. And I know, Jables, you're probably going to want to pick up on a few of those
because
mentioned that briefly as we left The Majestic. So, on balance, I really like this film, but I'm aware that other slightly more refined or urbane characters might pick holes in it.
Yeah.
Is it just that I think it's a good film because it's got Jason Statham in it? Probably yes. And I think it's one of those where it's not so much that he carries it, but like he kind of makes the film for me, as he often does in films, and I'm never going to be able to get past that. What can I say? I'll just mention a few things because there'll be other things you want to pick off.
Yeah.
So you mentioned going into this, Jables, and I'm going to pick this one off. The hive thing, the beekeeperishness, was there, right?
Massively.
Every opportunity, both in a serious way, although trying to be serious about it, and in a light-hearted way with bee jokes. And Jason Statham's character, Clay, is not only a beekeeper in the kind of, this is his special, what is he? He's not military. I don't know what he is, really. Yeah. Like special ops, no chain of command, but you don't really know.
No.
But he's also a literal beekeeper.
Yeah.
And we dwell on that quite a bit. So there's quite a bit of actual literal scenes with beehives. In his barn, he's got shelves full of pots of honey that he's lined up.
Yeah.
Really nice, you know. I've got a sense that he actually probably did a bit of method stuff in there, and he actually literally learned how to keep bees.
Maybe, yeah, maybe.
One thing that I noticed straight away, I don't know if you picked up on it, in the sort of opening credits, Jason Statham, producer, and I was like, right, okay.
Yeah.
So the beekeeperishness, what else can I say? The action scenes, I think, are generally good. You might disagree with me. They are Statham-esque in that they are often ridiculous, often contrived in terms of his methods, so he will kind of improvise a little bit with things he finds in his surroundings, and that's the kind of stuff we love. Not quite to the levels of like something like a Transporter, where he ends up getting his shirt off and using his shirt to strangle someone.
Yeah.
Those heady days.
But again, Statham staying in his lane, he's like, well, I mean, how old is he now? Probably late 50s, mid to late 50s, so he's probably not getting his shirt off as much as he used to. But yeah, that's still, that improvised fighting is good. Zany characters in this. Really, two-dimensional, zany, gaudily dressed, turned up to 11 stupid characters that are actually really annoying.
Yeah.
But Staith cancels it out and brings it back to positive. I'm not going to say too much about that because you're both going to want to talk about those characters. I feel like I'm only talking about flaws, but I actually love them. Complete leaps of logic and discovery I've written down here. What do I mean by that? It's like fast, but also slow. So you've got these kind of slow bits of him like wafting smoke into beehives. And then suddenly the baddies just know where he is.
Yeah.
And it's like, how? Just because they know. And then they turn up and they all die anyway. I don't know. I could go on. I'll just mention a couple more things. It was funny. And I think it was supposed to be funny in places.
Yeah.
But I wasn't sure whether it was just me. There were other people actually in the room laughing.
There was levity, definitely.
So there was the kind of, say, like dark humour, but there's a lot of graphic violence in this, but it's kind of dialed up, so it's like, oh no, that's ridiculous kind of thing. Yeah, I'll probably leave it there. I've got a couple of other funny things to pick up on later, but so, Jables.
Yeah, okay, so you're right in terms of when you hinted you weren't sure if Jason Statham carries the film. He does carry the film. If you didn't have him at the centre of it, I don't think you'd have much of a film, because I think he pulls off what he does really well. Overall, it was entertaining. You know, I didn't have any expectations. It was exactly the kind of film that I was expecting. Maybe a bit sillier in places than I was expecting. It was entertaining. I wouldn't necessarily say it was that exciting, though. It wasn't like a thrill ride kind of roller coaster sort of thing. It was a lot of set piece talking. And the talking bits in between, the dialogue was bad. People just felt detached, and I felt slightly detached because of just, as you said, Arkid, millennials being idiots, and the son who was supposed to be the head of the, you
that
know.
That was Josh Hutcherson.
Yeah. I didn't buy it.
I liked it. I thought it was funny. I thought he pulled it off.
But I can see both sides, yeah.
I don't know why, it just popped into my head. What's the baddie in Blade? A vampire
dude. Stephen Dorff's character.
Stephen Dorff's character.
His name in it.
So he's got that young, I know, at the time, you know, we're talking, what, late 90s, arrogance of, you know, are you old people, don't know what you're doing. But there's also a bit of bite behind it. So there's a bit of menace to it. And that's where I think his character was missing. He was just an idiot.
Yeah, but I liked that because he was just obviously an overprivileged little shit.
Yeah,
wasn't he?
But...
with the whole, like, getting massages and
the Eastern
singing bowls.
Mysticism
was
random.
It was
just
so funny. It just seemed like how you'd imagine an entitled little prick to be.
Yeah, yeah, because they obviously were trying to... So a lot of the stuff in the last 5 years was rammed in, wasn't it? Like crypto, NFTs, cybersecurity, phishing stuff, like boiler room type stuff. I almost got vibes with that boiler room setup, like Wolf of Wall Street stuff. So it's obviously like there's a little echo of that coming in. Hyper alpha type blokes in ridiculous clothes yelling at people to make money and stuff like that.
It just seemed dark, like a neon,
weirdly cyberpunk neon
stupidly
stuff.
Stupidly techie, but not actually techie.
That was supposed to give it that youthful millennial kind
it
of
didn't,
thing.
It didn't
oh,
for
I
me.
Thought
that,
it did.
Oh, it just, no, it just made me think this is dumb.
Because I think that this was a film for people our age and older to enjoy. I don't think
it's
really aimed at young people. I think it's there for older, revenge against smug little youths. Really,
okay, maybe. Like, maybe that's why I'm missing the point,
being a youth myself.
Yeah,
you're just on the cusp.
I know. So I just found them too much of a strange kind of outfit. The action's good. I like the action. I like the fight scenes. Not overly choreographed, but quite hard-hitting, I suppose, in the way that John Wick is very... It's almost balletic, isn't it? With the gun-fu and all that kind of stuff.
Gun-fu?
Yeah.
Is that a term you've made up?
No, it's a thing.
Okay, I like it.
It's more of a, I'd say, almost practical kind of... Mm. This is how you do it in a reactionary, beefy way, I'd probably say.
I don't think it was as stylized as John Wick.
No, but with that in mind, it kind of annoyed me that absolutely everyone was rubbish, apart from Jason Statham and the weird South African dude.
Yeah,
who... I'm going to call him the Rhino.
Okay. he was funny.
Yeah, kind of style.
Like, and, something out of a cartoon, wasn't it?
Oh, massively, and a lot. Yeah, and that's what I was thinking.
Did you see all the spit when he was showering?
Showering them
in spit. He was so angry.
There were scenes that kind of looked manga. In this, the way that you had this like weird conflict near the end with all these security guys in like SWAT outfits and suits, and then these guys wearing like luminous coats and shirts and Hawaiian outfits, like mingling between them, and they're all fighting on the same side, and they're all equally as rubbish. Like, I just got the idea that no one else was competent apart from Jason Statham, and I didn't even think the South African dude was actually competent.
He was just massive.
Just a big guy. So that kind of like annoyed me. I thought the story was a bit rubbish. I'm not going to spoil it because if people do watch this, but you were kind of saying on the way out, it's like it's moving up the chain.
Yeah, like the hierarchy.
Yeah, going up the hierarchy.
Yeah.
And like, let's just say this goes all the way to the top.
All the way.
Literally. And I just thought that's... It just didn't work for me. That just seemed really, really dumb to me. So as you said, the bee references, there was a lot of, there's a lot of bee talk.
I thought that those were going to be very serious. So like you said, I quite liked that there was some humour behind
but
it seemed to know what it was doing.
But some of it, like, you know, when Jeremy Irons was sat in a room full of all the military guys and Navy SEALs and explaining to them, like, the queen and the bees and the workers and the drones. And I was sat there going, oh, come on, don't do this. This is exactly what I didn't want. Then he calls them all rubbish and you're nothing compared to a beekeeper. Yeah, and like, I'm just like, they'd be sat there going,
thanks very much.
This old guy. Yeah. What are you talking
nice pep
about?
Talk, yeah. Anyway, off you go.
So with that in mind, that's where I was kind of like lost slightly as well. Because I don't know if this is based on a story, it's just an idea that popped in someone's head and they've just like fleshed it out like this. But it's like another secret organisation. So like in John Wick, they were like assassins. Kingsman, it's like their secret service, and it's a stylized secret service with the Kingsman shop, tailors, whatever. This, they're beekeepers, so they shoehorned all the beekeeping and references to that, but then they didn't flesh it out. That's what was kind of annoyed me a bit. There were no flashbacks, there was no kind of backstory or history, I'm kind of slightly conflicted with that. In some ways, that works quite well because it's quite a mysterious organisation that no one knows about. But then he literally goes back to the headquarters, just appears there, takes a load of stuff and walks out. Like, what?
Yeah.
You know, it kind of annoyed me a bit. And especially with the, because he's retired, the new beekeeper, you got to watch out for that one. They're crazy. I'm like, they're not crazy. They're just a f***ing idiot.
Yeah.
No. in a stupid outfit with a minigun on the back of their truck.
It was weird, the outfit, and then all that weird choice. She was like something out of, remember Clarence Boniger in Robocop, his gang of lunatics.
That's a great point.
Right there.
Yeah, that's what a lot of these people were like. Yeah, they were like, and not just Clarence Boniger, any of like the baddie gangs in Robocop. This is what the other gangs were like.
Yeah.
And even like worked in call centres that were like that. So it's this weird kind of like grounded in reality, but then hyper-stylized and stupidness of some other bits, which it grated on me a bit. But I need to go back to the fact that it was entertaining, it was silly, it did make me chuckle, probably for the wrong reasons at the time, but also for the right reasons as well. The hat doesn't suit him.
No.
Weird.
But it was a new look, so we'll let him have some points for that.
But I think kind of my final sort of thing is all the bits with Jason Statham in, I really liked. Because not just like he carried the film, you know, the character was quite a quiet character, but a methodical character. And you gravitated towards watching him and him being in it. And he'd done some good stuff and cool stuff. When he wasn't on screen, I kind of didn't care, actually. I didn't care what was going on. I knew what was going on, and I just thought, yeah, it's a bit rubbish. That's kind of what I thought. And I wondered if, but you said he was a producer on this, but like, if he knew all the bits of the story that were happening around. Because some of that was so bad, I think, for me, it didn't work. That I was just like, oh. And my other thing was that I was thinking is, like I said about the organisation, if it wasn't bees, you were saying about, you know, there's it could have been anything. It could have been ants. Oh, ants do, you know, they work. No, but that's what I mean. It felt like it was someone said, okay, we need a revenge film. We need a secret organisation. Someone think of something. And someone just went, but what don't we know about? Beekeeping? You got it. Perfect. Right, let's write it about that.
Yeah. Well, I think the root of it, I suspect, was someone had read a news article about not like colony collapse, but like, oh, if bees didn't exist, everything would fall apart.
Yeah.
So then they were like, ah, what if there's a secret organisation that's like bees?
Yeah.
And if they don't exist, everything falls apart and no one knows about them. I think that was the hook, really, wasn't it?
But then do the story about that. I think I would have been more interested in that story than...
You might yet get that story.
I know, you're right. There's probably a prequel or something in the works. So, yeah. What about you, our kids?
Yeah, I don't think I've got too much to say because you've both sort of said it all, really. I liked it. I thought it was good fun and I thought it was a good use of my time. I didn't feel at any point that my time was being wasted. I didn't get bored at all. Yes, it was formulaic. Yes, it had those patterns that you knew what was going to happen. Yes, it could have gone straight to Netflix. You know, it didn't necessarily feel particularly cinematic. But on top of that, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the performances. Like you said, I really liked the way Stath held it together. He was a really good grounded presence in it. But I did like Josh Hutcherson and the other little, I don't even know his name, the other little, the early version of him.
Yeah. No, I don't know who that was.
On the call centre. I thought they were good fun and I thought that setup was good. There were a few people who were in it, like Minnie Driver was in it, in a kind of blink and you miss it role. I don't quite understand. It probably would have been better if it was just some old white dude and then it was a bit more of an establishment conspiracy. Lance from Doctor Who. Do you remember Lance from the Doctor Who with the Rachnos? So it was quite nice to see him in a Hollywood movie. Yeah. I did like the two FBI agents. One of the FBI agents was related to the friend of Stath's who died at the beginning. Didn't really get that sense of grief and loss from them. They did. I kept forgetting that link, really.
Sometimes things were sped through a little bit, weren't they, for the purpose of moving things along, weren't they?
But I did quite like her, and I quite liked her partner as well. I thought they had quite a nice little dynamic together, a little bit of banter. Yeah. They were quite good fun. But there were a lot of moving parts with the different organisations, the FBI and the CIA and the Secret Service. And
Too many characters and too many people just popping up.
And I thought that towards the end, there were just going to be a few people trying to hide away. But it turned out to be a massive gathering. I lost track a little bit. So, pros and cons. Like you said, Ben, I know there were things wrong with it.
Yeah.
But I was very happy to watch it. I would totally watch it again. I don't know that it's part of the canon necessarily, but it's certainly part of the, is that on Netflix? Okay, I'll have a look at that.
I'm adding it to the canon.
I don't need to watch it again. If you know what you're going into, then you'll be fine with it. Like I sound like I'm down. I'm not down on it. I'm just like, guess I'm trying to be overly objective maybe. But it was like, it was entertaining. And if you're into this kind of film, it will tick your boxes, but it's not going to blow you away.
No.
Even if you're into the Statham canon.
There were things that could have been more fleshed out. Like he says at the beginning, when he's talking to Mrs. Parker, that whole, you're the only person who's really looked after me and stuff. And she was sort of saying about how he was when they first met. And I thought, I'd actually quite like to have seen that. That might have almost been a more interesting film.
Totally, that's what I was
getting. When he came to live there, and it might have made it all a little bit more, a bit more pathos when she does actually die, because you don't really know, do you?
That happens very quickly as well, doesn't it?
Any more, Ben?
Yeah, other motifs I like was the classic Jason Statham rapid costume change, which pops up in a lot of his films and is completely inexplicable. So, like, if you think James Bond is good at this, coming out of water in a diving suit and suddenly wearing a tuxedo, Jason just takes it to another level, I think. I mean, literally, it just doesn't make any sense. So, like, there's a bit where he's trying to get, towards the end, where he's trying to get into the grounds of this place where everything's going to kick off. And it's swarming with Secret Service. Very good. Of myself. That reminds me of another point I want to make in a moment as well. So he's got to find a way in, and part of that is costume change. But it just happens so quickly, and then he's one of them, and he's moving classic Jason Statham stuff. Suddenly he's part of the team that's moving into the premises, and he's literally in the identical outfit, and it's like, that was just not possible, but it doesn't matter. And then he gets in there. I've just realised that doesn't, unless I miss something, you might be able to correct me. Then he gets into the grounds, and then he peels off the tactical suit, and he's wearing like an actual suit. And it's like, what? Where was that then?
Underneath the three layers he was wearing.
Yeah. And then at the end, this is the other thing about Statham, right?
Every venture
he's got stuff everywhere. And they're like, he goes, like, he leaps over this balustrade onto a beach. And then he's like, he's a bit injured by that point. He's scuffling along. And then he just like digs into the sand at a random point and finds another outfit.
Yeah.
And it's like, are these just placed where he knows he's going to be? Or does he go there like a few hours ahead of time and just bury stuff everywhere?
He's a beekeeper, Ben. That's what they do.
I guess so, yeah. But that reminds me of other stuff. So the violence is quite indiscriminate. You might correct me again on this.
Yeah.
He attacks a lot of law enforcement, military people.
He kills a lot of law enforcement.
Yeah, at least badly injures, possibly kills quite a lot of them as well. But they never explore that. Like, I know he's like, he's going through and he's just going to do what he needs to do. But it's like, well, he's about justice. Yeah, these people are just employees.
Yeah.
But he's killing them.
Because he even does say to some of them at one point, I don't want to hurt you.
Yeah.
And I thought he was going to be able to try and do what he was doing without, and it might have been more imaginative violence if he'd been trying not to kill the law enforcement people, but the villainous people.
And he kind of doesn't kill the FBI.
He just rams through everyone at the end.
He doesn't kill those FBI people out the building, outside the building. He like shoots them in their arm, in the chest. Yeah. But then at the end, when they're clearly like security guards as well as the goof troop, he does just kill the security guards. And they're, you know, they're obviously just government employees.
Yeah.
It's a little bit Rick and Morty, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I'll definitely be watching this again.
Well, I'm sure you'll have more to say next week when you've rolled over it and possibly and watched
probably
it again.
Seen it again, yeah. What's your car rating, Ben? Car moment, first of all.
Ooh, car moment. Well, I think the car moment is probably the bit, and this is actually in the trailer, where the first sort of low-level boiler room baddie gets taken out.
Is that in the trailer? That's really
cool. I know.
That's why I didn't see the trailer.
Yeah. That's what I was saying.
What, with the truck?
With the truck, yeah.
That was good.
That was good.
So this guy, he's having a bad day. He's super confident, super arrogant guy in the sales room trying to get everyone to do the phishing calls and everything. And then he kind of crumbles quite quickly. He gets his fingers chopped off, then escapes, and then Statham does that kind of thing where he just catches up to you slowly.
I don't know how. It's a bit like It Follows. But
yeah. And then he's just like, all right, I'm actually bored of this guy now. I'm going to kill him. So he straps him to a piece of webbing or something and then straps that to a truck. And then... And then it's this old truck that he's got, like an old American pickup.
Yeah.
So he opens the bonnet and he's going to rev the engine up.
Yeah.
And there's some weird handle under the bonnet. And I'm like, where does that come from?
Yeah.
Was he pre-installed that?
Beekeeper bin.
Bees just have special things in their cars that do that. But yeah, so that's probably the car moment.
You know what petrol you use as well, don't you?
No, go on.
BP.
BP, yeah. Very good. Oh, yeah, one other point, just before I do my car scale, it's like... Very clearly, most of this is filmed in England.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you know, I thought that looked like England. Big it could have been New England, though, because bits of New York State do look like England.
That house at the end is very much like just an English mansion.
I thought, why would they film it here?
I think it's a mix. We should probably look, but that could be a task for next week, Ben. But
Yeah,
there was some shots of the outside of the building where I'm like, that's a street in England.
Yeah.
Why would the cycle lane be on the left-hand side? That's what I was thinking. Why'd the cycle lane be on the left-hand side of the road? Do you know what I mean?
So car scale, I'm going to go Lamborghini LM002.
Right.
If you know what that is. So the Lamborghini LM002 is a Lamborghini pickup truck from the 80s. And I think they only made a few hundred of them. It was there, but they were having a foray into making military vehicles and it went horrifically wrong because they made these... massively overweight vehicles that were no good at anything and didn't work properly. But they had V12 engines, so that's fine.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So, ludicrous. So basically like that the South African guy, imagine him but in like car form.
Yeah.
Jables.
I don't have a scale. It was exactly what it was. It's basically the best I can give you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Akid.
Well, I'm just going to give it Expendables out of films.
Really?
It was probably on a par with that. I enjoyed it. I don't want to see any sequels.
Yeah. But you're probably going to get four.
Yeah.
Or three sequels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're making another one.
Beekeeper, are they?
No, Expendables.
So it's going to be five?
Yeah.
I don't think we'll get Beekeeper sequels.
I think we absolutely will.
Do you? Okay.
I have a feeling we might, because I don't think they'll be able to resist that secret organisation thing. Someone will try and have a little pick at it.
So, trailers. Do you remember what the trailers were?
I do. Yes. Oh,
Go on.
There was The Holdovers.
Yeah.
Which is Paul Giamatti as a teacher in a private school who has to babysit over the holidays. A couple of funny lines I chuckled at. I think it looks like it might be okay. Quite a sort of seriously.
I haven't seen a whole trailer for it. I've seen a couple of mini like teaser clips or something from it. And actually, the whole trailer, I'd say the first half looked good because it was quite funny and quite creepy. And then the second half, it looked like it got a bit worthy and serious.
It's sentimental.
And it was very much done in it was a weird style, wasn't it?
It was.
It was done in, I wouldn't say an 80s style.
Almost,
it was almost
retro-y.
It was retro-y. Literally done in not a shaky cam, but like a video, wasn't it? It was done in a video style, like a straight-to-video kind of film style. But it looked quite funny. It might be quite entertaining, heartwarming, bit of everything. Looks all right. I'd watch that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. When it first popped up, I was like, what the hell is this? And then I kind of warmed to it as it went through. Yeah. So I think some of the humour's going to be quite funny.
I like Paul Giamatti, though.
Yeah,
it's
good,
funny.
Yeah.
And the other one, Ben?
Something, Planet of the Apes, something.
The Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes?
We've talked about it before.
We did, yeah. I'm kind of looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think the name's stupid. Neither of you
care. Yeah, I don't really care. But
Yeah, the thing is, it's got... They can't have a Planet of the Apes film and just call it Planet of the Apes anymore.
No.
If you know what I mean. So they've got to have something of her.
To be fair, it looks really well done.
Yeah, it does.
The way they move and talk and all that stuff.
And you know, I know we spoke about it before, but I was not interested in the Planet of the Apes films. Then when I watched them, I liked them. Mm-hmm. And I feel a little bit like this with this. I'm like, oh, I'm not that interested in it. But having that knowledge, I'll probably like it when I actually get to watching it. So,
Next week then, Ben.
Next week, the only options that we like the sound of, so the holdovers, is unfortunately not showing in the evenings.
Okay.
It's matinee stuff. Is that right? Matinee?
Yeah.
So we'll have to have a look offline.
Or we could take the afternoon off.
Or...
All right, we won't.
Or we'll get back to you on the socials, which are...
At Just So Jables on Facebook, Instagram and X. And we will let you know what we are up to. If you've got any good ideas for us, email us. hello@justsojables.com.
Excellent. Don't forget to check out the new revised website, justsojables.com. Ben?
Yeah, it's all on the blockchain now. So check it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's got an NFT on it.
Pushed it into the metaverse.
Yeah. Well, time for us to buzz off.
I should have thought of B puns before. I'm kicking myself now.
Yeah, yeah. Come on, honey. You'll think of some in a minute.
That's it. No, Ben, brilliant. You lost.
Just a buzz.
Just So Jables.